There, I think I got it straight. Now I kick the plug in. You know, while I found the one-man grand jury process abhorrent, it was within the legislature's ken, and we had to recognize that. That seems to me to be a popular misconception of my attitude as a justice of the court. I find people even today saying to me that I was a radical member of the court. I wasn't a radical member of the court. I was one of the most conservative members of the court in the sense that I insisted that the court go back to first principle. Whenever we had a controversy, for example, involving statutory interpretation, what was our function? Our function was to determine what the legislature intended and the language it used. And we started substituting our own notions of what the legislature intended. Then we were overstepping our bounds. And I was frequently critical of the court for doing that. When we dealt with the common law, on the other hand, I felt that our role was much less restricted than it was when we were simply interpreting statutory law. When we were applying the common law, we were in the arena of judge-made law, and we had the obligation, as well as the power, to change that law when we were convinced injustice was being done by perpetuation of a rule that the court itself had announced in favor of time. I don't think that view can correctly be viewed as characterized as radical. I think that is a very conservative approach to the business of a collegial state court's judicial process.
Do you remember how you came down on those issues that appeared before the court a couple of times? Whether it was a matter of statutory notice, and this is in the field of governmental immunity, some of the statutes way back that related, maybe they had statutes, can you think of? Well, they had to.
Sure.
Like in if you were had a claim against the highway department, the culvert was sticking out and ruined my car. There was a case, I tell you, there was a case where a person in a slip and fall, a freak slip and fall event, had been disabled very severely. Do you remember that case?
Yeah, the 2-inch case, the sidewalk case?
Yeah, I think so. Let me see that.
I didn't write it. It was handed down, I think, before I got to the court, and I think Thomas Smith wrote it.
But there was like a 60-day, very brief time during when the plaintiff had a certain notice.
Yes, I remember.
And there was a 2-year period now, I think. But at any rate, that isn't in discord with what you were just saying.
No.
Okay. Now, how about the law of the workers' comp law?
Carter?
Well, okay, Carter. Let's take that one. Now, that was the psychotic breakdown case.
General Motors, yeah.
Wasn't that a first of a...
Yeah. Anyone think? And yet it wasn't. Roger, that was a decision that, again, I thought, still do, was rooted in precedent. I took great pains with that opinion to trace the history of Michigan's compensation for emotional injury. And what I did was to show in that opinion that Michigan had recognized, our court had recognized, that compensability of emotional injury since the early years of the century. And the only thing that distinguished the Carter case from earlier cases was that there was no single traumatic event which caused the emotional damage. For example, there were earlier cases that involved a worker who was struck in the back by a falling wrench. The wrench was dropped by a workman working on a scaffold.